This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Good afternoon to you and yours. I hope you're doing terrific. The Pels had everything in their hands and just got absolutely intimidated and run out of their own building. LSU baseball, can they be this bad? Swept again while the Cajuns do their own sweeping over Marshall. And hail to Scotty, who wins yet another green jacket. And LSU football. The defense, I said, there's no way the defense could be as bad as it was a year ago. Now I'm wondering, possibly could be, after what was observed at the annual spring game. All these stories and much, much more coming your way today. Monday, it's tax day, April 15th, the year 2024. I'm Jordy Holtberg here, Studio 1A, my main man. Couldn't do it without my producer, James Mesh, who's inside the EBCO Development Studios, which are on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 103.7 Lafayette. Head west, ESPN 104.1 in Lake Charles, streaming all over the world thanks to our free mobile app, ESPN SouthwestLouisiana.com. Mike's Marine Hotline, open and available at 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Scotty Scheffler, 27 years young, won his second green jacket Sunday, becoming the 18th player to win multiple Masters and the fourth youngest to do so behind Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. They were both 25. Seve was 26. Scheffler won by four strokes thanks to seven Sunday birdies, the most in the final round by a Masters champion since Nick Faldo had eight back in 1989. He joins Woods as the only players to win the Players and Masters in the same year and the only players to win multiple majors while ranked number one in the world. By the numbers, Scheffler's made $12.7 million in on-course earnings over the last 35 days. That comes to roughly $362,000 a day. He's been so good that his caddy, Ted Scott, has earned $1.2 million this year based on the standard 10% cut, which would actually place the caddy 54th in money earnings out of 200 PGA Tour players. How about that? Scotty Scheffler, how good is he? Well, he's really, really, really good. Is he good enough to start talking about long term? Well, we shall see about that. Was in attendance at the Smoothie King Center yesterday to watch the Pelicans try to lock up the sixth seed in the Western Conference. The Lakers with LeBron, Anthony Davis, and the rest of the crew would have no parts of it. And we'll talk a lot about this today. But I'm calling Zion Williamson out in the first half where the game was totally won by the Lakers. Totally won by the Lakers. Zion Williamson was a no-show. Totally, from my vantage point, which was really up close and personal, totally intimidated by the moment yet again. Remember the play-in tournament when the Lakers beat the Pels by something like 40 points and Zion was raked over the coals and deservedly so? Since that point, he was terrific. But it's something about the Lakers. He just can't play. The Pels have no answer for Anthony Davis. It was a layup after layup after layup, backdoor cuts, lobs at the rim, and the Lakers just humbled. Team that looked like they didn't even belong in the same time zone as the Lakers. So, because of the loss, And because Phoenix won, the Pels drop out of the playoff round, and now they're in the play-in tournament. So Tuesday, inside the Smoothie King Center, guess what? They get to play the Lakers yet again. Holy smoke. They can't beat the Lakers. Can't beat them. Not like this. Totally, absolutely, totally intimidated by them. If the Pels somehow win, then they're in, and guess what they get? They get the defending champion Denver Nuggets. It'll be over in the blink of an eye. If the Lakers win, they get the Denver Nuggets. So the word out there is, hey, wait a minute. Lose this one. Play again. You'll be at home, and you'll play either Golden State or Sacramento. I'm just saying. We shall see. We shall see. We'll talk about this starting off hour number two with Ali Cassell. Meanwhile, LSU baseball. Another series sweep. And its fifth consecutive SEC series loss, this time to the Tennessee Volunteers. And they're now 3-12 in conference play. 3-12. Boy, they missed opportunities, poor base running, lack of effort sometimes, mistake after mistake, not timely hitting, leaving runners in scoring position without being able to bring them in. And the bottom line is, LSU makes too many mistakes to beat any SEC team, much less a really good team like Tennessee. So 3-12. When you think about making the NCAA tournament, you likely have to get to 14 wins, meaning LSU has to win 11 of their final 15 league games. Who in their right mind would take that bet? Who? Not me. No. Not me at all. On the positive side of things, the Raging Cajuns, boy, what pitching they got all weekend. A 3-1 Friday win, a 1-0 Saturday win, and a 2-0 Sunday win. They sweep it. They're in control of their own destiny, and they're getting it done. They are getting it done. So, talk a little bit about that. Spring football, I don't know what to make of LSU and spring football. I don't know. They seem to have some good things. Look like Garrett Nussmeier was terrific. Looks like he has his go-to guy in Kyron Lacy. And it also looks like that the defense has more holes in it than Swiss cheese yet again. Chunk plays left and right and left and right. I wasn't there. I saw some highlights. I saw players running free in the secondary. I saw offensive line making holes in a defense and runners just running free. So we shall see. The transfer portal is open today, and LSU needs some help. They need some help in a big time way. So our guest list today will cover LSU baseball as we do each and every Monday. Anthony Renato will join us. That you heard didn't even pitch at all this weekend. So something's amiss. Something's going on. We're trying to get to the bottom of it. But when you're 3-12, you're not good. And I don't want to hear about, well, we've got a lot, you know, we're youthful and that baloney. Baloney. You're not good. 3-12 is awful. Glenn West will join us and talk about LSU football. Is the offense that good, or is the defense yet that bad again? We'll see that. Ali Cassell will talk about the Pelicans. And I've got to get his opinion. It looked like Zion was completely intimidated by the Lakers yet again. Jonas Valanciunas couldn't even come close to controlling Anthony Davis. And all the other pieces to the puzzle fit. And I'll tell you this much. I was about four rows up, mid-court. And I just watched LeBron James play. You may like him. You may not like him. Whatever. But he's a basketball savant. His vision, his unselfishness, his ability to hit people on point, on time, is uncanny. He is an amazing basketball player. And his physical conditioning, his shape, his leanness, his upper body strength is a marvel. He is a marvel. I've always told you guys, I love watching the greats do their thing. He's one of the all-time greats. I mean, he is something. He is something. And he has the Pelicans right in his hands. And he knows it. He knows it. So anyway, we'll talk with Ali Cassell about that. We'll hear from Scottie Scheffler, the Masters champion. Blake Ruffino will join us as well, and we'll talk, get his perspective of LSU football. James Mesh, my main man, my producer, is inside the EVCO Development Studios. Happy Monday, James. Hope you had a good weekend. And our poll question today, what do we have in store for us?
Well, it's a good Monday. I hope yours is going good as well, Jordy. For this one, it's Masters related, and of course, specifically, Scottie Scheffler, as he won the Masters, as you had mentioned earlier. Do you think that he's going to be able to put a Tiger Woods-esque run together on the PGA Tour? 57% are saying it's going to be a great run, but not Tiger good. Yes, he's that guy, got 30%, and the last 13% have said that it's not even going to be close.
Wow, I don't know. I mean, you're just taking a dart and throwing it on a board and seeing where it lands. So many things have to – does he have the – physical ability and the mental aspect to do it? Yes. Is he going to have, he's going to have a child. Is that going to change his perspective on things? And, is he going to want to play all these tournaments all the time? Is he going to maintain his health? There's so many variables that come into play here. Don't know. That's why Jack Nicklaus was Jack Nicklaus. That's why Tiger Woods was Tiger Woods. And there aren't many close to that. So I'll have to think about it. I would love to see it because I think it would be great for golf. I don't know how you can't like Scottie Scheffler. When you listen to him talk and his priorities and his perspective on things. Wow. Boy, he hits it in the fairway and he hits it on the green. And even when he doesn't, he's found his putting stroke. But his even keel demeanor is amazing. And how, he just does. He's immune to the pressure. So we'll see. But tip of the cap to him. What a spectacular run it was at Augusta to win that green jacket, his second in 3 years. That's awesome. Go to Facebook, go to X, and let's figure it all out. We'll take our first time out of the day, LSU baseball, with Anthony Renato. Ooh, 2-13 or 3-12, excuse me, 3-12? You're not good. We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
We're back as we begin on this Monday, April the 15th, and we start the process of trying to figure out what's going on with LSU baseball. They go up to Knoxville, play a very good Tennessee team, get swept. They are now 3-12 overall in conference play. And you got to get to hopefully 14 wins to make it into the NCAA tournament. They got a long, 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 long way to go. You know what the old adage is? You are what your record says you are. And if that's the case, oof, the team that was began the season ranked number 2 in the country is nowhere close to that yet. Our good friend Anthony Renato, World Series champion, Major League Baseball pitcher, kind enough to join us yet again on a Monday. And I hate to start a show off in a negative fashion, but it is what it is, right? You are who you are, and your record at 3-12 says you're not very good, Anthony, but you are. So how you doing, buddy? What's up?
I'm good, Jordy. I'm good, except for the life of LSU baseball right now is tough. But like you said, man, and try not to be negative, but you just call the shots how you see them. And it's not looking pretty for LSU baseball. And as fans, you know, and as alumni, it's disappointing. It really is. It hurts to watch, honestly.
I mean, base running errors, some nonchalant running that gets you thrown out. I understand sometimes another team is better than you, but effort is something that shouldn't be questioned ever.
No, absolutely. And that's kind of what you're seeing with this team. We talked about it the last couple of weeks. You know, it seems like you need that leadership. You need somebody to step up. And when guys are, you know, not paying attention to where the ball's being thrown, what base, when to slide, and you're supposed to be one of the leaders on the team, you know, that's a systematic thing. That's not a talent thing, right? And especially when you are the lesser of the talented teams in a matchup, those are the things that try to get you wins, right? That you would expect. Those are the little things that you do to try to win a few games when you really need to. So yeah, that's frustrating. And then, you know, again, I don't want to ever harp or be negative, but at some point there's got to be some sort of accountability, and I'm not coming at Jay Johnson, but I, as an alumni, as somebody who cares about the program, I have a lot of questions just about decision making, and it doesn't make sense. And obviously, you know, whenever you go 0-3 and you're 3-12 in the conference, hindsight's always 20/20, and it's easy to pick that apart, right? If some of those moves work, it might be a different story. But as of now, it's not working, and so you know, I have a lot of questions for sure.
I read a stat. This team did something this weekend that hasn't happened since 1977. Tigers lost their 5th consecutive series in SEC play. Wow. 77.
Yeah, I heard that stat and that you know, it was the 5th series and LSU had yet to win a series in conference play. That's just, that's not even close to the epitome of LSU baseball. And again, I was a kid from New Jersey who came down here in 2007, you know, 2008, even when the program was, you know, quote unquote at its worst in the last 20, 30 years. And we never heard of something like that. So, I think after a national championship too, there's just more limelight, more eyes on this. And so it seems a lot worse than it is, but obviously whenever that, you know, those kinds of stats are popping up, it's never a good thing.
They've been shaking things up in the bullpen. Thatcher Hurd didn't pitch over the weekend. Neither did left-hander Javon Coleman or Justin Lohr. Christian Little didn't play. Fidel Ulloa didn't play. He's trying some things, but, was there anything positive that you saw out of this? Maybe Aiden Moffitt did a little good thing, or I don't know.
Yeah, Jordy, I don't know. It's hard to find some positives. It really is. I think, you know, Ashton Larson has been a bright light, I think, you know, as a freshman doing some things that I really enjoy. And I've been saying it for a while. I love Aiden Moffitt. Obviously, he struggles with a little bit of control stuff, but we don't have really an electric arm like that except for him. So I like, you know, him getting out there and getting a feel. And, Cam Johnson obviously has great stuff, but I think he's more of a liability than Aiden Moffitt. And I think Aiden Moffitt needs to be getting a lot of those innings, more than Cam Johnson does at this point. But, so those, are the two the bright spots. But I think, again, I'm questioning some of the decision-making and the shaking up, right? I mean, when you have somebody like Luke Coleman, who's an established Friday night guy, and really your bright light on this team this year, besides Tommy White, who is Tommy White, right? But why are we moving him from the Friday spot? I really don't understand it, Jordy. Like, I hate this era of analytics of, you know, let's match up and try to win on a Saturday. I don't care. Give me your best guy on Friday night. Let's go get game one win. The guy is 6-1 in the league. He has some of the best swing and miss stuff in the conference and in the country. Why are we not trying to go get game? I don't care if it's their ace. Like that's what Friday nights are about. And you know, as a former Friday night starter, that gets at me a little bit. Let's go compete. That shouldn't be the thing that we're switching up. And then when he has 91 pitches, don't bring, you know, again, hindsight's always 20/20, right? In the lefty-lefty matchup, Griffin Herring has been incredible, but like, let the guy get out of his jam. He had a no-hitter through five. Like, what are we doing? 91 pitches? Let the guy get out of it. And then, you know, those are two things that bothered me this weekend and really, as you can tell, kind of boiled my blood a little bit. And then why is Cade Anderson not getting a start? Why is Nate Ackenhausen getting the start on Sunday? Cade Anderson is the guy, and we bring him in when it's 6-2 and he gets an inning and a third. I don't get it. I really don't. So those are the things that really just didn't sit well with me this weekend. And again, I'm not a coach. It's easy to coach from the sidelines, but those are the things that I would, if I was in front of Jay Johnson and if I had an opportunity to talk to him, I'd be asking him those things.
Yeah. Man, let's go. Let's set up a meeting. Let's go do it. The other thing that's obvious is, and Skip Herbert always said, it's not about hitting, it's about timely hitting. And LSU can't seem to get a timely hit. They have trouble driving in any runs with runners in scoring position. They were 3-for-16 on Friday. They were 3-for-20 with runners on base Saturday in just a 2-run loss. So yep. I don't know, you know, baseball's a hard sport. I know guys are throwing it hard and they're throwing it with spin and it's going in, it's going out, it's going up, it's going down. I know it's hard, but man, something's got to change with that.
No, you said it absolutely. And again, it feels like we're on repeat every week, right? We're talking about this stuff, but I remember after the Mississippi State weekend, that's what we were talking about. I said, you know, after we lost that series, we were still, you know, top 10, top 15 in the country. And you said, what do we do as a coach? And I said, I'd imagine Jay Johnson and his staff are going back and they're trying to, you know, get outs with, you know, get out of innings when we have two outs and put guys away with two strikes and then also get those clutch hits just like Mississippi State did, right, against us. And that's what good teams do. And unfortunately, again, we still have half the SEC play. It is possible to do this, but right now, it doesn't look like we are a good team, and we're not doing those things that make up the DNA of being a good team, right? When we were fortunate enough to win the national championship in 09, and then even my freshman year in 08 when we went to the World Series, we won 23 games in a row, and those are the things that you do to put those streaks together, is right? Like, it doesn't matter what inning, what the score is, two outs, two strikes, you find a way to do that kind of stuff, and so this team just doesn't have that right now. Again, I try to be positive, and hopefully somebody's going to step up, and sometimes it is a spark, like freshman, like Ashton Larson, you know, coming in and being a guy that didn't start the year in the lineup and now is one of the better hitters, you know. I don't know. But, yeah, something's got to click. Somebody's got to step up, and those things have to start getting done. And when you put those numbers together like that, I mean, that's going to be an abysmal, you know, ending for you.
Yeah, I didn't expect Larson. He started in each of LSU's last five SEC games. He has at least a single hit in all of them, and he had a pretty good play, perfect throw to throw out a runner at the plate on Friday for a double play that ended the inning. So sometimes a coach can only do so much. Players have to make plays. And I just wonder if they're feeling the pressure that is built up to this crescendo that is, if that shows you the true metal. It's the old cliche. Sometimes it bursts the pipe. And sometimes that pressure produces a diamond. And right now, there's a lot of water leaking through some pipes.
Exactly, dude. That's it. And it's sad to say, but I mean, that's the pressure that comes with the LSU baseball, you know, uniform and title and stuff. And I think, unfortunately, some of these transfers and some of these freshmen are kind of learning the hard way, you know. National championship and wins are earned. It's not, you know, you don't just get it by putting on the jersey. And so I think you're absolutely seeing that 100%. And it isn't all coaching. You know, I think there's some things where coaches can put guys in position to be successful, but ultimately these guys got to perform and do the things on the field. So it's definitely a mix of both. But like we said, hopefully we're at the second half of the SEC and somehow put some magic together and squeak out 11 wins just casually out of 12. You know?
Yeah, the last time LSU played on a Sunday and had a midweek Tuesday game, they lost to Southern. Now they have to play New Orleans, UNO, tomorrow. Before, and now, granted, the schedule gets a little bit less daunting from a national ranking perspective, but anytime you go on the road, and Missouri's won five games in the league, you've only won three. So, I mean, this is going to really, really, really tell if this team has any fight left in them, I think.
100%. And Missouri had some real energy this weekend too in a couple of their games and stuff. And so you know, you kind of circled this on the calendar as hopefully a series win and maybe even a sweep, But this point, you know, I don't know what to say. So, yeah, hopefully, like you said, there's got to be something left in the tank, and these guys got to come to play. But like you said, too, I mean, we got a midweek game this week that we got to take care of business for, too. You got Blake Dean over at UNO, right? Former LSU great. And so, you know, they got their work cut out for them this week. It's going to be interesting next couple of days.
Wow. This has got to be one of the most unexpected falls that I can remember in quite some time. You're not usually ranked number two in the country and then just fall precipitously off the cliff. But who knows, right? Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. I can't figure it out.
There's been some crazy – there's been crazier things that have happened in baseball. But 11 out of 12 in the SEC to try to make the postseason is definitely a daunting task. Doesn't matter who you're playing, you know, just especially with the way things have gone so far. So, yeah, it's definitely one of the most eye-opening falls I've seen for sure. And, you know, as an alumni, as a fan, it's tough to watch sometimes.
Yeah. I hear you, Anthony. I love your passion. I love your honesty and your candor. That's terrific stuff as always, buddy. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, buddy. We'll talk to you maybe next Monday if we can.
Yeah, hopefully. Thanks, Jordy. I appreciate you, man.
You're the best. Anthony Renato, kind enough to join us. We'll shift gears from this. We'll head to Tiger Stadium, get a recap of how LSU football looked from Go247. Very own, our good friend, Glenn West. Next.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
All right. We have touched on LSU baseball. I'm done with that for a while. I can't muster anything else to say about that. So let's talk about football. The spring game has come and gone. LSU gets a big recruiting commitment for football, and the portals open up, so hopefully some more help is on the way. But our good friend, the big fella, Glenn West of Go247 Sports, joins us each and every Monday, and we're appreciative of it. Glenn, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Jordy. How about yourself?
I am terrific. I didn't see it. I just saw a clip or two. I saw wide receivers running free. I saw running backs running through gaping holes. I said, this LSU defense could not possibly be as bad as it was a year ago. Please tell me I'm correct on that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the first team offense certainly ran the day in terms of spring. You know, Garrett Nussmeier was out there for three series, and they scored touchdowns on all three of those series. And if you watched even just a little bit of the highlights, you saw that two of those plays were on a 45-yard go route where Xavion Thomas was essentially uncovered. Yeah. And the second one was a 60-yard touchdown where Kyron Lacy essentially just beat Ashton Stampson coverage down the field. So, clearly, there's a lot of work needs to be done. You know, this is going to be a defense that's a work in progress. But look, I mean, what did we talk about back in January? We knew that this was going to be a defense that wanted to return a lot of its players from last year. Brian Kelly talked to us about continuity being important on that side of the ball. And they think this defensive staff is going to be able to turn things around here. So I think they just need some time. You know, they were very vanilla with what they did. They did not show very many coverages, so that certainly gave the offense an advantage in that respect. I don't think you take a whole ton out of the spring game. I think you kind of put more stock into what you saw for a month during the spring. And I thought this was a very more opportunistic group. I thought that they created some turnovers throughout the entire spring. So there's some stuff to build on there, but definitely, you know, a work in progress on the defensive side of the ball.
So don't judge too harshly at this point in time. Let's give it some time. That's fair. Garrett Nussmeier. Sum it up. You mentioned three drives, three touchdowns, but how did he look? How did he, you know, well, just give me your feel of the vibe when he was out there.
Yeah, he looked good. I mean, I think he looked exactly like you hoped he would look. He's been in this offense now for 3 years. He understands the system. They've been switching things around a little bit in terms of play action, you know, working that into their offense more from a passing game perspective. They've been working in more outside perimeter runs as well. You didn't get a sense that you learned a whole lot about the first team offense just because there was just so many coverage busts in the secondary that led to some big plays. But I thought that Nuss took what the defense was giving him. He didn't throw the ball into some tight spots or tough areas of the field that made it dangerous for potential interceptions. He looked really sharp in the actual scrimmage. And look, I do think that one thing that should be mentioned is that they before the scrimmage started, they actually did some red zone drills. And the defense held up really well in the red zone, and the field tightens there. It's a lot harder for offenses to score, but I do think that was a positive, is that they made it tough on the offense to score on those red zone drills, and Nuss actually did put one in a little bit of a precarious situation down by the goal line that I believe Major Burns, it might have been one of the defensive backs. Actually, I think it was DeShawn McBride got in there and made a nice play. So, look, this is an offense that I think is going to be, in large respects, going to be a group that has to carry this team next year. They have to be the strength of the group. They have a veteran offensive line that's probably one of the best in the country, if not the best. And you've got to lean into what they have personnel-wise, and they have a lot of talent. That this is an offense that's going to be able to roll out a lot of players, a lot of good skilled players, and it's going to be Nuss's job to give them the ball in a timely fashion.
I heard Tyron Lacey is the guy, but I also heard that the transfer from Liberty, CJ Daniels, turned some heads. What did you see in CJ?
Yeah, he had a couple good grabs. He I think that the biggest thing with him and with Xavion Thomas, the two transfers, has just been trying to pick the offense up. This is I wouldn't call it an overly complicated offense, but it's still, when you've got Kyron coming back, when you've got Chris Hilton coming back, Aaron Anderson, those are all guys that have had a year in the system at least. So they're going to be more familiar with the playbook and going to get those first team reps. And I think what you saw towards the end of spring was CJ Daniels and Xavion Thomas both kind of insert their way into that grouping as well. And I think you just see the talent there. It jumps out off the screen. Daniels is going to be a guy that's going to be able to go high point the ball for you, get vertical, create some really big plays. I mean, he I think was top 10 in the country this last year in yards per catch. So he's going to be able to give you some really good vertical threats there. So he had a couple catches. I don't believe any of them really broke for a huge gain, but certainly he's going to be a guy that you lean on heavily in this offense next year.
Any guess or clue from what you saw as to who might be have the advantage as the backup quarterback?
Yeah, I don't know that we learned a whole ton in the if you're just judging by the spring game, and really throughout the entire spring, it was one day it was Ricky Collins that got the first second team reps, and then the next day it was AJ Swan who was out there with the second team. So like there's I think they still are trying to learn about that spot. The one guy I'll throw out here, and look, I know he's a youngster, but just looking at him, the ball really just comes off his hand well, is Colin Hurley, the true freshman. I mean,
Okay.
he just turned 17 a couple of
That's
weeks ago,
crazy.
which
That's
is
crazy.
it's crazy. It really, really is. But I mean, when you go out there and you watch him throw, he absolutely can sling it, I think, with all these guys. And I think it's really going to be about him developing the mental side of the game. And I'm not saying he's going to come in here and be QB2 in the fall, but I wouldn't be surprised if he pushes, his way up the depth chart come this fall. I mean, he's just got a ton of talent. And I think that Ricky Collins took some steps this spring, but I think consistency is going to be a big thing for him, and LSU is certainly hoping that he can kind of take those reins a little bit better here in his second fall with the program.
So even though the score was tied, the offense, when they had their guys in, ruled the day. I hadn't heard one word, not anybody say anything about Harold Perkins. Did
No.
he even play? I mean, did he look like he knew what he was doing? What?
Yeah.
Give me the synopsis.
Yeah, so he had a couple tackles. I mean, like I said, there were a couple coverage busts in the secondary when the first team offense and defense were out there. So it made it hard for really any of the, anybody to get a good feel of maybe how both sides of the ball looked when you had that kind of disparity in the second half in the secondary. But front seven, I think outside of a 32-yard run by Caleb Jackson in the first quarter, Did a really nice job of holding up the run. I think they had maybe 50 yards on 16 carries throughout the rest of the spring game, outside of that 32-yard run between Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson. And Harold Perkins is going to be a guy that's right in the center of that, right? I mean, they want him in the middle of the field, making those plays in the backfield, stopping runs, helping the interior defensive line out, which is going to be a real chore, I think. You got to go into the portal and get a couple more D tackles, but Harold is the big X factor for this entire defense. I think if he plays well, if he finally learns the position and picks it up and is flying all over the field, he can make up for a lot of your deficiencies on this defense by his playmaking ability, by his ability to cover space with his speed. He looked fine. He didn't really have any big breakout plays that, man, it make you go, wow, that was really impressive. But they were keeping things very vanilla in this game defensively for a reason. And I think you'll see a lot of it next season with Harold if he's able to pick it up.
Came out of this thing relatively healthy. Anybody and unscathed?
Yeah, so, I mean, the guys that were out for most of the spring, so there was Landon Ibietta, the receiver, Nathan Dibert, the kicker. Those two didn't play. But really, outside of that, there were no injuries. And Brian
That's
Kelly,
good.
that was the first thing he said to us in the media after the post game there, was that they got out of spring very, very healthy. And I think that's a really good sign for LSU here as they move into the summer months of development.
Just before the spring game, they get another commitment, running back from Alexandria Senior High School, JT Lindsey. Now, what do you know about him?
He's a good player, and he's rising up the recruiting services rapidly here. I mean, he was really not on the radar, I don't think, going back to last year. But over the last few months, he's up to 100, like a top 150, 60 player on 24/7, and really throughout the industry. He's really broken onto the scene here these last couple months with his play at various tournaments and camps, and where people are really able to get a good eye on him. So, he's a prototypical Louisiana back. I think he's going to be somebody that comes in and really helps you. You've already got Harlan Berry committed as well. They're trying to go after James Simon, the Calvary Baptist star running back. They would take all three of those guys in a heartbeat if they want them. But they've got two of them locked up and pretty secure, and now they're going to try to shift their focus to Simon and make it a trio here in this 2025 class. But really good start, really good player, and someone who's going to be able to help this offense going forward.
Shifting gears a bit, the WNBA draft is tonight, and Angel Reese has a lot of good qualities. She's got some deficiencies. Her offensive game is, she's not going to get stick backs after stick backs after stick backs. She's going to have to learn how to shoot from outside. Yeah. But she has that energy. She can rebound. She can defend. So I would imagine a lot of people have her going in like the top seven of this draft. So that'd be terrific.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's probably going to be a first-round pick. And, like you said, I think that energy, that motor that she plays with will really help her in her early career. I think the WNBA and really professional leagues in general really look at a player that plays with high energy and high effort, and especially in a sport like basketball, and they think they can mold some of those other parts. Like, I think you can learn how to shoot a little bit better once you get to the league. And so if you have those other traits of just competitiveness and motor and fire, those are maybe a little bit harder to maybe teach a player at that late stage in their career. So I do think Angel's going to be a first round pick. I think she'll be a rebounding machine once she gets to the WNBA. It's just, can she develop a good, consistent jump shot that's maybe a mid ranger? I wouldn't probably extend her to the 3-point
no,
line.
No,
soon.
No.
Definitely get her involved with the mid range and keep her honest in that way.
I don't follow recruiting a lot, but I do know some transfers that are pretty darn good. I'm excited for Matt McMahon. I think he's doing doing a pretty darn good job.
Look, I mean, the big thing with this group this year is they wanted some player retention. They wanted some guys to come back for another second, third year. And I think you're getting that with Tyrell Ward and Jalen Reed both making the decisions to stick around for a third season. Yeah. That's huge. I think that could end up being probably the two biggest moves of their entire offseason, is getting those guys to stay. But yeah, you bring in Jordan Sears this last week, a point guard from UT Martin, averaged 21.5 points a game, shot the ball 40% from three-point range last year. Somebody that's going to be able to distribute the ball a little bit as well. Got to cut down on the turnovers. You know, he's a pretty high turnover guy, but really like him. And then they've also added Cam Carter, who we talked about a couple weeks ago, from Louisiana guy coming back home. So, and then they picked up Victorious Miller, the freshman, as well. So those have been kind of the big moves, you know, throughout the offseason so far. They've got some players here that they're going to try to bring in this week, and I think probably the next big move that they have to make is find a rim protecting center that can guard the rim a little bit better and certainly grab some rebounds.
He is Glenn West, off the cuff, knows his stuff. Thank you so much, my friend. Mondays are great with you. I appreciate it. Happy Patriots Day.
All right. Yeah. Nice. Didn't know it was Patriots Day.
They had the Boston Marathon and they got the Red Sox playing. That's nice. That's the day, man. That's the day. Right. Boston is the epicenter of the sporting world. Glenn West, go to 247 Sports. You're the best. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks, Jordy. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two after this.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
All right, we're back to wrap up hour number one. James Mesh, let's talk about our poll question of the day dealing with the Masters champ yet again.
Absolutely. And looking at our poll question of the day, right now, still leading the way at 56% is the people saying that Scottie Scheffler is going to have a great run, but it's not going to be a Tiger-esque run when it comes to the PGA Tour. 31% believe that he will be able to get to that level, but then the last 12 to 13% are saying it's not going to be that close.
Okay. Still don't know. But it looks like, you know, Max Homa is a really good player, nice guy. Scheffler, nice guy. Keep waiting for Xander Schauffele to do something. Nice guy. They got some nice guys in there. Back Tiger, you know, a lot of people didn't like Tiger, except when he had the club and was swinging it. A lot of people didn't like Phil Mickelson, his biggest competitor. You know, but these are nice guys. I don't know. It's like anything else. Players just keep getting better and better and better, but there's more and more and more of them. So time will tell. So many things have to go right to be able to do what Nicklaus and what Tiger did. People forget how many second place finishes Jack Nicklaus had in major events. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like 14 or 15 where he came in second, much less the 18 that he won. So anyway, all right. Boy, I got a lot to talk about in hour number two with my main man, Ollie Cassell. Boy, Zion completely intimidated by LeBron James. I don't care what anybody says. I saw it with my own two eyes. I felt it. And he just bowed down to the king. We need to talk about that as the play-in tournament begins tomorrow. We'll hear from Scottie Scheffler and we'll talk more LSU football. Yes, I don't put much stock in a spring game. Whew. Probably good right now, or it could be a long, long season. All that stuff and more coming your way. Hour number two, as Cissé Lema won the Boston Marathon for the men. The 34-year-old Ethiopian ran the 10th fastest time in the race's 128-year history. How'd you like to run full out for 2 hours, 6 minutes, and 17 seconds? No, thank you. Hour number two, straight ahead.
This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go on this Monday, April the 15th, the year 2024. Hope you're having a great day on this tax day, Patriots Day with the Boston Marathon and the Red Sox doing their thing early on. Boy, we NBA action. It's the playoffs and the play-ins are all set, and that's where we begin this hour with my main man, James Mesh, inside the EVCO Development Studios in the producer's chair. It's on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 103.7 in Lafayette Head West. We're on ESPN 104.1 in Lake Charles and streaming all over the world thanks to our free mobile app, ESPN SouthwestLouisiana.com. Well, was not a pretty sight yesterday inside the Smoothie King Center as the Los Angeles Lakers wasn't even as close as the final score would indicate, a 124-108 win. The Lakers, because of their win and the Pelicans' loss, that combined with the Phoenix Suns' win, and guess what? The Pels are now in the play-in tournament and not in the playoffs. So tomorrow night, guess what? Lakers get to stay in town, and these two teams will meet yet again. Ali Cassell, our NBA insider, Pelicans insider, joins us. Ali, good afternoon, sir. Yes, the sun did come up this afternoon, much to my chagrin, thinking that after that performance yesterday that it would not come up again. But how are you?
Good afternoon, Jordy. And look, I think it's almost fitting that the Pelicans, in the way they lost yesterday, then it's followed by tax day, right? So anybody that's last minute, yeah, it's not a good feeling. That's the problem. It's disappointing on several levels. As you were there in person. You saw it. The Pelicans didn't meet the Lakers' force, not in the opening minute, not out of halftime. That can't happen, right? So they didn't meet that. And, of course, if you just win one more game, you get to 50, you get that play-in game, you don't have to worry about that type of stuff because you're automatically in the playoffs. So you put yourself in position by winning four in a row on the road, and you just had to get one more win. They couldn't do it. So, from, like I said, several facets, it hurts, right? It stings.
I got a bone to pick on this one. And I go back to that debacle in the play-in tournament when the Lakers just absolutely schooled the Pelicans and Zion Williamson was roasted over the coals by everyone in the national media. Now, he certainly turned that and fueled his energy and his fire, and he was terrific in the second half of the season, or that stretch run down to the finish line until yesterday. I was there. I saw it up close and personal, Ali. He looked completely intimidated by LeBron James and Anthony Davis. He looked like he wanted no part of it. He played no defense. He was getting beat backdoor. He was getting beat off the dribble. I don't know what happened. He was non-existent.
Yeah, he certainly didn't make an impact. And then post-game, he told us he was too passive, right? And that can't happen. So for whatever reason, I'm guessing he probably wanted the game to come to him. You had Brandon Ingram back, so you had to figure he knows he's going to have to share some responsibilities. But either way, you're right. That doesn't affect what you're doing on the other side of the ball, right, defensively. And honestly, thought it permeated through the entire roster, right? Whether it's indecision, not knowing how to cover, or doing a good job of basic the first pick-and-roll actions, right? LeBron runs three or four of them opening minute. JV can't guard him, can't meet anybody at the rim. Same thing happens on switches. And then, as you mentioned, then they start trying some zones, start getting really beat backdoor. And so it wasn't just Zion for me. It was just an apathy by the entire group out there. And that's something we've rarely seen, right? So that can't happen. You've got to think it won't happen, right? Whenever they've had this, seldom happened this year, where it's been, honestly, an effort type of related issue. They've always bounced back from it. So that's the only hope I have. But just when you knew what the stakes were, they're going in this game, how they could have come out like so laissez-faire, it's just beyond me. You would hope that the maturity, even though they're young, would be greater and they would have understood the moment better.
You know what I didn't understand, and I thought it was a big mistake by Willie Green, and this is just me. You've been on a pretty good roll. You know, you've won four games in a row, all on the road. Trey Murphy was terrific. I would have kept Trey Murphy in the starting lineup, and I'd have said, Brandon, look, you've missed a whole bunch of games. We're going to slowly integrate you back into the play. We're going to keep our guys that are hot. We're going to put you in, give you a couple of minutes here, slowly work you back. I didn't understand him putting him in the lineup to start off with. It looked like everybody was completely discombobulated again.
Yeah, that's probably a part of it, a small part, but you know, Karl-Anthony Towns started for Minnesota Timberwolves. As you mentioned earlier, they lost to the Phoenix Suns, but
and didn't they get beat by a ton?
And usually,
there's my point.
Yeah. I mean, that's one way to look at it. But the other way to look at it, that's one of the team's stars, right? How many times in history has when one of these guys coming back from injury in such a big game been told by their coach, "You're coming off the bench"? I can't even recall an instance of that happening. So, I don't think Willie Green had the power to do that, right? Probably didn't even want to consider it. You know, when it comes to his relationship with B.I. So it is what it is on that facet.
Yeah. I'm just grasping it. Here's another thing. You tell me, you see this team all the time. You know what I notice? I'm watching them on the floor. They're out there doing their individual work. There's no Zion. They come out as a team, and they start there, you know, at about the, 14-minute mark before the tip. And they're doing their layup drills and all this. No Zion. 6 minutes before the game starts, no Zion. 5 minutes before the game starts, no Zion. He came on the court with 4 minutes to go before tip, and he grabs a pole and stretches a little bit, took two or three three-point shots, and then it's time to play. Does he always do that?
That's become a norm for him this year, and it started, and we were trying to remember when it started, but I want to say it was either in December or January, when all of a sudden, we just looked up, and he's not out there in the starting lineup, in the starting layup lines, right, those team warm-ups.
Yeah.
And here's another interesting facet. He has stopped also coming out for those individual pre-game workouts, right, how there's always a couple players per rotation, each player about 15 minutes or so. And they rotate through the entire, 12 men that are playing for the night that are active.
Right.
And Zion stopped doing that as well. So, yeah, that's something that we talked about, and we're going to ask him about in the after the season's over. But, yeah, it's raised eyebrows, right? Because then you look on the other side of the court, Jordy. To your point, I watched LeBron warm up from start to finish, and I'll tell you what, there's dedication there. If you want to be one of the greats, that's what they all do. I watched Kobe do it. I watched Michael Jordan do it. Now, like I said, I'm watching LeBron do it. They understand that every minute that they can spend honing their game, getting that proper focus for the game while you've got a basketball in your hands is probably the best way to do it. And that's why they all do it. So for Zion not to do it, it yet shows you that he's not 100% experienced or versed in knowing what he needs to be doing at all times, right? So the maturity factor, it's not completely there yet.
I don't get it. LeBron is a marvel. I mean, he didn't even look to score early. He hit 17 assists, 11 rebounds, and he ends up with 28 points. He is a physical marvel, and what a savant of the game of basketball. It's just amazing. And how many times did he just play bully ball and just drive through somebody's chest, get to the rim, and lay it in time after time? He's something.
He understood the mismatches, right? So with him, he's not as fast as he used to be, so he has to use physical force. I mean, it's amazing to watch how he dislodged, especially Dyson Daniels, who I feel like is the Pelicans' best one-on-one defender, probably their strongest one in terms of being committed. And he dislodged him so easily for positioning to where I was honestly thinking, almost yelling, "Dice, try and take a charge," right? Because what else can you do? You have to. You have to put up that force to where, okay, I'm not going to get dislodged again. If he does hit me, I'm going to take a charge. And I didn't see any of the Pelicans do that. So LeBron, hats off to him. I think he had 7 assists through the first, not even 5 minutes of the first quarter, right? He knew where the Pelicans were going to be exposed on those rolls, backdoor cuts, right? He knew he was probably going to see double teams or hard hedges at least coming off of those picks, and played it perfectly. That's what killed me.
Yeah.
Pelicans are good at rotations, right, Jordy? We've seen it this year. They're also good at defending the first action where they're going to make you go through multiple actions before you might have an easier look. And that's where it showed me that the Pelicans didn't come out with the requisite effort and focus last night, because they didn't do that. It was far too easy for the Lakers to score, including LeBron. Admit it.
Well, I mean, they couldn't stop
it. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, they couldn't stop Anthony Davis. Poor Jonas Valanciunas was lost out there. But I got the key. I'm telling you, LeBron's going to do what LeBron does, and Anthony Davis is going to do what Anthony Davis does. You cannot let D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves play like they did yesterday. If they play like that, Lakers are going to the, I mean, well, they got to play Denver if they beat us. So that they're not going to beat Denver, but they could beat anybody. Those guards are playing like that. So you got to shut those guys down somehow, some way.
And that Pelicans lone win against the Lakers this year came on New Year's Eve, December 31st. And what we saw in that game is exactly what you just described. LeBron and AD had good games. They specifically, I remember, had pretty solid first half, but they didn't let anybody else beat them. There was no overwhelming free throw disparity, no overwhelming three-point disparity. Right? So they kept everything in line, checked all the boxes, and got out defensively, especially after those other guys, as you mentioned, and played the way they're supposed to play, right? So we saw that in the last, 18 minutes yesterday, right? We saw them play with that force, deflections, get some easy buckets, right? Get some open shots, because CJ didn't get any open shots until it seemed like late. Same thing with Trey. So that's what they have to do, and you're absolutely right. It can be done because they've done it before.
There's a root. There's kind of talk going on out there that the Lakers – you know, maybe Anthony Davis has a little some back spasms, and all of a sudden he says he's going to play, but all of a sudden, oh, I can't go because the Lakers may want to lose this one, people are saying, which means they would have to play again on Friday, I believe, at home against the winner of Golden State Sacramento. And if they win that, they avoid playing the Denver Nuggets, who swept them a year ago, I think. What do you think? Any rhyme or reason to that? I mean, it makes kind of sense, you know, when you think about it for the long run. But you know, you always are rolling the dice if you put it in a one game winner take all scenario. But is the risk worth the reward?
Yeah, Jordy, you said part of it. My answer right there. Yeah, you can't leave it because one game is you're leaving up some things to chance. But the other thing for me is Lakers are very good. It's a good matchup for them playing the Pelicans, so why throw that game? And moreover, for guys like LeBron, who's 39 and wants every day of rest as possible, why wouldn't you want that Friday off? Give yourself, tomorrow, you got yourself 3 days off. So, no, it's hard for me to buy that argument completely.
Yeah, I agree. Boy, it's a bad matchup. And the problem I have is I really think deep down in their minds, I don't know if the Pels think they can beat the Lakers. I really don't.
I don't know either. Look, a couple of years ago, they had a lot of success, if you remember, right, where the Pelicans then faced the Phoenix Suns in the playoffs where they weren't supposed to get there. I remember in the regular season to close out that stretch, they had two big wins against the Lakers, and that was without Zion. So I feel like there's certain guys in that locker room probably do feel like they can beat them. But to your point, I think Zion may have had maybe some, you know, going back to what happened at in-season tournament, as you mentioned, probably some flashbacks, bad ones, because LeBron was on him, and he just didn't play with that same amount of force. Not until, like I said, probably middle of third quarter on. Hopefully, maybe that turned on the switch for him. That's what I wanted to see. I knew they were going to lose that game, Jordy, with the way they started the second half, but I just wanted them to see him compete, to come out and meet that force, and gain maybe some confidence that way, especially if some players need it, like Zion. And I saw, so I'm hoping that they don't suffer through another bad start like they did, because they finally – some of them hit that level. We'll see, though.
What do they do with Anthony Davis? Because, I mean, he's too quick for Valanciunas. He's too big for Larry Nance. I mean, I think he's unguardable in this thing.
He kind of is. But I think there's two ways if you're the coaching staff. You got to go about it. If you're going to continue to start JV, right, Jonas Valanciunas, you've got to play through him. Right? I think of the couple of matchups where they actually threw the ball to him and he was allowed to go to work. I think, look, Sabonis beats up and the rest of the Kings on the Lakers. I think they swept them this year. One reason, because Sabonis brings it to AD. I think you got to allow JV to do exact same thing. Beat up on AD, especially with his back. Okay. Probably not going to be at 100%. You know he's going to play, but beat up on him, wear him down. Maybe he won't be effective in the second half. Or, if you don't trust that, then I think you've got to start Larry Nance. I really do. In that one matchup we talked about where they beat the Lakers, right, New Year's Eve, Larry predominantly played in that game and was far more effective than JV, because you're right. JV can't stay with AD offensively. And if you're not going to take care or utilize JV offensively, right, get him touches where he can pass out of double teams or just go one-on-one, then you almost got to play Larry, even though it is a mismatch too.
Oh, Ali Cassell, here we go. So let's lay out the scenario. The Pels have two chances in this thing, correct?
Exactly. Seventh seed gets two home games, right? So you got a chance tomorrow. If you don't win, you come back on Friday and host the loser, or excuse me, the winner of Kings Warriors.
Gotcha. Okay. Ooh, they better get this one Tuesday because
you don't want that pressure on Friday, Jordy, right? No way.
Right. Right. Oh, my gosh. All right. Ali Cassell, we will see what happens. Go find out why Zion doesn't warm up. I don't get it. Don't get it. But anyway, I see LeBron. He's 39 years old. He's out there breaking a sweat, warming up, doing everything. Zion's a young pup. He's not even coming out and warm. I don't get it. I don't get it. But anyway.
You know, I know he does stretching and all that in the back. I mean, that's what I've been told. But look, now that he's starting to shoot some jumpers, why don't you break the sweat? Right? Why don't you shoot some of those jumpers? Because now you're trying to take them, and you're trying to obviously make them. And, of course, build up a sweat. Shoot some free throws where you're kind of a little tired, right? Just a little bit.
A little bit.
Really that. Yeah, that bothers me.
And what bothered me even more than that is he didn't do anything the first half. They come out in the second half. People are warming up, and he's sitting on the bench. Like, what are you doing?
Like I said, it's been a statement. I don't understand it.
Don't get it. Ali Cassell, I'll never figure it out, but I appreciate your time as always, my friend. We will see all the pressure in the world on both of these clubs because they both need a win. But, the other thing I can't figure out is we went on the road, can't win at home. That place was packed. It was packed.
And it's just, and Jordy, think about this. Last year they went, I want to say, 27-14 at home. Now you have Zion this year. Now you've largely been healthy. How come you can't win at home? I don't get it. You've got the firepower. I don't get it.
Yeah. All right. Questions to be found. This it'll all go away if they can win on Tuesday, tomorrow. And then the Joker and Jamal are waiting. God, good luck. Thank you, Ali. Take care, buddy.
Yeah,
talk to you
Jordy.
Soon. All right. Doom and gloom here. I'm sorry. All right, let's see. We'll take a timeout. We'll hear from Scotty Scheffler. Get our poll question. Give it another shot for you to vote on X and on Facebook. And more stuff coming your way next.
Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana's sports station on YouTube.
Hi, welcome back. 23 minutes after the hour. So much basketball news, LSU baseball news, the Cajuns baseball, and so many other things. Thousands of Kentucky fans packed Rupp Arena to welcome new head coach Mark Pope, who arrived at the press conference and the hoopla with the 1996 National Championship trophy in hand that he was a member of and helped win. The Braves right in the picture. Spencer Strider is going to miss the rest of the season after undergoing elbow surgery. The preseason NL Cy Young favorite made just two starts. Conor McGregor will face Michael Chandler at UFC 303 on June 29th. His first time in the octagon since June of 2021. All these things out there. And then there was Scotty Scheffler, 27 years young, won his second green jacket yesterday, becoming the 18th player to win multiple jackets and the fourth youngest to do so behind Jack Nicklaus, who was 25, Tiger was 25, and Seve Ballesteros was 26. He won by four strokes thanks to seven Sunday birdies, the most in the final round by a Masters champion since Nick Faldo had eight back in 1989. Scotty Scheffler, quite the guy, and he is the man, no question about it. Here's some sound from Scotty talking about it's a grind for the week, but man, it's so much fun to win.
Yeah, I'm glad I brought my stroke average, my putting average down on 18. That was nice. Down to, you know, five strokes. 2.5 is my average, so that's not bad. It's hard to put into words how special this is. It's been a long week, a grind of a week. The golf course was so challenging, and to be sitting here wearing this jacket again and getting to take it home is extremely special.
The wind blowing, you saw the sand coming out of the traps early on in the, you know, the Thursday and Friday rounds. It was crazy. Then it calmed down on Sunday, but it's so, so difficult. And you got to love the mindset of Scottie Scheffler. He's got his eye on the ball. He knows what he's doing. He's very grounded. And he says his identity is forever secured.
You know, that's a really good question. I was sitting around with my buddies this morning. I was a bit overwhelmed because I told him, I was like, I wish that I didn't want to win as badly as I did, or as badly as I do. I think it would make the mornings easier. But I love winning. I hate losing. I really do. And when you're here in the biggest moments, when I'm sitting there with the lead on Sunday, I really, really want to win badly. And my buddies told me this morning, you know, my victory was secure on the cross. And that's a pretty special feeling, to know that I'm secure for forever. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether or not I win this tournament or if I lose this tournament, you know, my identity is secure for forever.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. However, he does love to win. Even with the birth of his young child coming, he wants to play and he wants to win some more.
Well, I'm definitely not going to intentionally take my eye off the ball. I will go home, soak in this victory tonight. We'll definitely enjoy the birth of my first child. But with that being said, you know, I still love competing. My priorities will change here very soon. You know, my son or daughter will now be the main priority along with my wife. So golf will now be, you know, probably fourth in line. But I still love competing. I don't plan on taking my off the ball anytime soon, that's for sure.
Entering the Masters, there was a strong argument to be made that the 2024 version of Scottie Scheffler is the best golfer we've seen since peak Tiger Woods. Now that he's won, it's kind of hard to argue otherwise. He still hasn't shot a round over par this year. He's made $12.7 million in on-course earnings over the last 35 days. That's $361,500 per day. Really? So maybe absurd or absurdly premature to think a guy who now has two Masters championships could one day challenge Jack Nicklaus's record six. Yet there may have never been a player with a more perfect mentality, if not game, for conquering Augusta National. And with that in mind, our poll question of the day talks about Scottie in terms of peak Tiger Woods, James Mesh.
Absolutely, and still leading the way. They think that it's going to be a great run, but not on the Tigers level at 54%. 29% had said, yes, he's that guy that he could have that Tiger-esque type of run on the PGA Tour. But 17% are saying that it's not even going to be close. And we did get a couple of comments. Ralph said, Jack over Tiger, in my humble opinion. Scottie's a great guy and very good player, but not generational. Watch out for Aberg in the future. Tana said, nah, great player, of course, but I just don't see it happening. And then Salty Steve said, Jack and Tiger were different men. He could be like Rory or Spieth, a nice run for a few years, and then flame out. Awkward swing will contribute to physical issues. Then he will come back to the pack.
I think it'd be great for golf if somebody could challenge Tiger and his 15 majors and then make a run at Jack and his 18. We'll see. Max Homa, Ludwig Aberg, Colin Morikawa all fell victim to Amen Corner on Sunday. Speaking of Tiger, made his record 24th consecutive Masters cut, surpassing the 23 of Gary Player. Freddie Couples, excuse me. And then he posted his highest 72 hole score ever at plus 16 and finished dead last. It was great to hear Vern Lundquist one more time signing off from his final Masters by saying it's been an honor and it's been a privilege. And how about a shout out to Jose Maria Olazabal, 58 years young, shot even par on Sunday to finish tied with the likes of Jon Rahm and Brooks Koepka at the age of 58. Not bad for a guy who plays one competitive event a year. How about that? All right, let's take a quick time out here. When we return, Blake Ruffino will get his perspective. I know he thinks LSU's defense is awful, but how awful is it, and is it fixable? And is the LSU offense, how far off from last year's record-setting offense that only could be close to the 2019 season? How good is this LSU offense? We'll all have all that conversation next.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
We are back 36 minutes after the hour. So glad you were with us on this Monday, April the 15th. It's that time of the day, that day of the week, when we get our good friend from the host of the Are You Serious podcast, Mr. Blake Ruffino, to join us. Hello, Blake. Good afternoon.
What's going on, Jordy? How we doing?
We're doing. I gotta get your opinion of this LSU football team. I don't put any stock into spring games, so let me start off by saying that. But you watched, you saw, you observed. Let's be upbeat. Let's talk about some positives that you saw.
Yeah, I think some positives were, you know, obviously the offensive line and how they looked. I think even with a new running game, doing a lot of power action, zone read action or inside zone action. So I think that, Jordy, you're a top, I mean, 2-3 offensive line in the country, if not number one. And you're going to need to lean on them because I do think, Jordy, that, you know, as the season goes on next year, you need to take your best unit, which is that offensive line, and lean on them. And mm-hmm. when you do that, Jordy, I do think that you can shorten the game and make things easier for you defensively. And I think you have a really good running back room. Now, do I think they might need to go get another? That's a whole different topic. But you saw two backs on Saturday that also looked really good. Jordy, I have to say this. I think that there's something about experienced players in the big three sports. And I think Kyron Lacy has shown LSU fans that the older players, Jordy, in basketball, baseball, football, when you just give a guy, you know, 2-3 years in a system and they develop and they get better.
Absolutely.
I mean, Kyron Lacy has been the talk of camp, right? And so, you know, in today's world, we don't get to talk about that enough. And he had two big plays, a 75-yard touchdown, and then the big 35-yard catch. So, offensively, I think that they've looked good. Jordy, I got to be real. You said stay positive, so I'm going to punt on the defense at the current moment.
Yeah, well, listen, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Just some other names. Somebody told me C.J. Daniels, the transfer from Liberty, looked like he has gotten his grasp of things and is making plays as well.
He did make some decent plays. I thought, you know, he looked very physical at the point of attack, broke a lot of tackles. Really, Jordy, he's a lot like Kyron Lacy in a lot of different ways, ironically. But he's really physical. He's going to get after it at the point of attack. I mean, look, I think that he's going to play. And I think that, you know, just him running with the second team is somewhat of a formality. I think when we go out there in August, he'll be with the ones. Once he gets to, you know, the plays more down and rhythm with Garrett Nussmeier, et cetera, I think that he'll be in that three deep. I think it'll be him, Kyron, and probably Chris Hilton to start the season, barring, God forbid, injury. I do think he's that good. I do think he could be, you know, a 1A to Kyron or 1B to Kyron, however you want to put it. I do think he's got that type of ability. Now, the question becomes, Jordy, can he do that consistently? Now, we saw him last year, you know, have 2-3 catches in a game, but he'd have 100 yards. I don't think that he's going to be asked to do that here. What I think he'll be asked more to do is a lot of what you saw from Malik. You know, like, Jordy, can he give you run after the catch? And I think he can in those tough yardage. So I think that what we saw last year is going to be a little bit different from him because of the way that you run things offensively. But if you're talking about a big physical kid, that can make, you know, make catches at the point of attack, that will be him. I think it'll be a good red zone threat, so something to watch out for.
will there be less of a drop-off in the production at the quarterback position than I expected? Is Nussmeier, I mean, he was, look, 7 for 7, 187 yards. That's hard to do against air. Two touchdowns, no interceptions. He threw the deep ball, you know, good. How do you think he handles this role now that he's the guy?
Just, I mean, I didn't walk out of there, Jordy, be honest with you, with anything less or more of Garrett Nussmeier. Now, I will tell you, we've been to spring game and two practices, you know, full practices where they scrimmage. Jordy, he has yet, even on Saturday, he has not thrown a touch that I have seen. Now, I'm sure he has, but he, when they get down in the red zone, Jordy, he has not been specifically efficient. Okay? So if there is something that he has to get better at, look, those windows get tighter and the decisions get tougher. So I do think that there will be drop off because not only the running game, right, from Jaden Daniels, which, I mean, you just can't simply replicate. But, Jordy, you were the best team in the red zone last year offensively, and Jaden Daniels was 95% of your production in there from a yardage standpoint, and then he was 84% production on your touchdown aspect point. The thing that separated Jaden that people don't give him credit for was, I mean, once he got in the red zone, he was going to score a touchdown 84% of the time. By the way, that statistic that came out from PFF, the 84%, was not just last year. Okay, that goes into 2022 as well. So, God forbid, I don't even know what he went last year. So I do think that you could take a drop off there. Now, when it comes to just running the offense and being productive, you know, getting the ball where it needs to go, no, I don't think that you have a drop off. I think that you do have to drop off in the running game. But I do think you add an element maybe that Jaden, you know, he could run to get a first down instead of throwing it. That's going to be the different element. So there's completely different things of how you want to do it philosophically. Now, again, I can't emphasize this enough. Jordy, if there's one area he's got to work on, it's got to be red zone because you've got to score there. And look, again, I'm just saying, I did not see him all spring do that. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. So, look, I mean, like, Jordy, I go down the first part of the scrimmage here. Incomplete, run. Two of those are touchdowns, by the way. Incomplete. So, those are the things that I think he's got to get better at if we're being very, very nitpicky. And, you know, if you're going to say a drop-off, I think you've got to be somewhat nitpicky. But, no, I mean, I'm not even
that's fair.
Worried about Garrett.
That's fair. I just saw a couple of highlights on television, and all I did was see wide receivers running like free, like they're doing warm-up drills. So I don't know if LSU still has a talent deficiency in the secondary. I know they didn't want to show Southern Cal much, so I'm sure they downscaled everything from a defensive perspective. But if you're going to play man-to-man and you're going to leave your cornerbacks on islands, you can't get outrun to the football, and it seemed to be that way numerous times.
Well, here's something that I will say to that. Two things can't be true in what Brian Kelly said in the post game. He said that they were very simple on defense. Okay. So, Jordy, if they're very simple on defense, that makes it worse with the blown coverages. Now, I've had, you know, I guess you could just say disagreements with people. But the second touchdown to Kyron Lacy, I do believe was in BK said was cover three. The film doesn't say that. The film says that they were in cover two. Now, maybe something got lost in translation. I don't know all that, and they can correct that. The problem is that when you're – Jordy, we're talking about day one install stuff with two defensive staffs now. Okay, so we gave the personnel the benefit of the doubt last year that it was all Matt House to some extent. Mm-hmm. But now when you're running basic man – Jordy, they ran three coverages. They ran cover three, they ran cover one, man-to-man, and they ran cover two. Jordy, in two of the zone coverages, they got busted. So, the problem that I have right now is, how can you blow simple coverages? And now I start asking the question, is it an intelligence thing? Because I do think that there were a lot of players that came up and physically did some really good stuff. I'm starting to question, do you know, like, where's the football IQ? You know, like, when we look at, like, 2011, Brandon Taylor, Eric Reed, Mo Claiborne, Tyrann Mathieu, Jordan, not only were those four guys really good, but their football IQ smart. Was on a different
level. Yeah.
I just no don't question. Know. Again, it's just like the simple stuff of the game that you get taught in high school. So I'm not anything negative, but if you're going to say we were very simple and vanilla is the word that was used, well, you can't be vanilla and then have blown coverages because that's the problem. Now, Jordy, if there would have been a man-to-man coverage and just gotten flat out beat, well, that's a whole different topic. Right. That's not what happened. Okay. What happened was they just, you know, they were out of position, blown coverages, and getting up higher. Literally, when his child wants that blown coverage busted.
He is Blake Ruffino, the Are You Serious podcast. Brian Kelly said it, over the next 4 months, they've got to find defensive tackle transfers. And they got to figure out, they got a bunch of players out there. They got to figure out who's going to play cornerback. Who knows? Kylan Jackson maybe may get some play. Whatever.
Yep.
PJ Woodland may get some play. I don't know. Time will tell on that one, but they just got to get better. I'm curious your thoughts on Harold Perkins and, you know, what did he look like? Did he seem more comfortable playing inside than in the past? What was your assessment?
So I've been saying this from the beginning, and Jordy, I started saying this when we got to camp in the first scrimmage. I cannot make a true determination on Harold Perkins. And let me give you the two reasons. Number one is interior defensive line is so bad, okay, mm-hmm. that how do I make a determination? And, Jordy, I think even Florida State, I thought they got away from him being an inside back way too oh, well, he didn't look good against Florida State. Well, neither did Omar Spates for the rest of the season, right? And
that's
so
right.
You changed everything up. Well, now you're putting him in there, and it's in the dudes in front of him were getting getting pushed around so bad that, Jordy, by the time that he makes the right read in a normal time frame where, look, I mean, he's making the right read, which is great. That's what I love to see more than anything. Look, he made the right read. And he made the right read over and over again. And I agree with BK on that. Like, he made them over and over again. The problem is that the defensive line got pushed back so far in that interior. Jordy, there was you could be Patrick Willis, Bobby Wagner. I don't really care who you are. When the offensive line is getting that much pushed, it is a recipe for disaster. So I cannot, for my own sake, a right determination on him because, Jordy, I don't know if he would make the play. Like, if he had guys that were solid in front of him, could he make the play? How much better could he have gotten? So, really, I don't know how to verbalize it. I just don't know what I don't know because it got in front of him getting pushed around. Now, the part that surprised me this morning when myself and the team went back over the film was really DJ Chester on Harold Perkins. Jordy, you want to talk about NFL dude on NFL dude? My goodness. They were going at it. And after the game, I saw them, you know, like dapping each other up and stuff like that. That's what you like to see, good on good. And Harold Perkins might not see an offensive line better than this, Jordy, outside of Georgia, okay, who my goodness, how good they looked yesterday or on Saturday. But that's just how I look at it. I cannot make a determination on him.
All right. So they've got some figuring out to do. They got some work to do. These players have to continue to get bigger, stronger, faster if they can, and get ready for fall camp. In the meantime, Got to go find some D linemen in the portal. And are you hearing anything about that? Some guy from Indiana, I think, was in town. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Jordy, I got to be real with you. I haven't heard much other than him.
Yeah.
But he's been all over the place, to be real with you. I mean, he's look, I'm not trying to say the kid's going on a money grab, but Jordy, he's been on seven visits in 5 days.
Go grab a bag. Go get you some.
I'm not saying, you know, it comes with a bad, you know, a bad thing when you say that. Hey, the kid's just going after a bag. Well, I mean, it's what it looks like. Now, yeah, there are a couple. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. We're out of time. Unfortunately, we're up against a hard break. But all right. So in a nutshell, give me a grade: A, B, C, or D, or incomplete.
I give it a solid B.
Solid B. He is Blake Ruffino, best in the business with the Are You Serious podcast. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Jordy. See you next week.
All right. We'll wrap it all up following this final timeout.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
All right, welcome back. Tomorrow we'll be live from Pluckers on Nicholson Drive. It'll be a lot of LSU stuff. James, I'm going to see you there, big guy.
Absolutely. You'll see me. You'll see Ray. You'll see Dawson. And you'll see Foot.
Wow.
Or Ally. Lunch is, Foot's going to be here live in studio.
Lunch is on me. How about that?
Sounds good.
So I'll have a new producer tomorrow. Okay. Good to know. Poll results. Scottie Scheffler. Is he going to be a one-hit, two-hit wonder? Is he going to be a Tiger Woods-ish kind of a guy? What do the masses say?
Well, over 50%, 54 to be exact, had said that it'll be a great run from Scotty, but it will not be on Tiger's level. 29% had said, yes, he's that guy. They think that he will be able to do that type of run. But then the last 17% don't think it's going to even be that close.
All right. I hope it is close. I hope it is. I think it'd be good for the game of golf. I really do. All right. Well, thanks to everyone who participated on this day, 77 years ago, April 15th, the year was 1947. Jackie Robinson broke Major League Baseball's color barrier when he took the field for the Brooklyn Dodgers on opening day, changing baseball and America forever. So it's Jackie Robinson Day, and MLB will honor Robinson's legacy today in a tradition dating back to 2004 when players wearing his iconic number 42 and tributes taking place at ballparks across the country. I didn't know about this one, but on this day, April 15th, 1965, the NFL changed the color of the penalty flag from white to yellow. Why? Because it coincided with the rise of color TVs. I did not know that. Tomorrow, we'll have people like Doug Thompson, college national champion pitcher, Mikey Matuk, Lafayette's finest, Phil Frankes. A lot of baseball talk. James, thank you. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible. If you're in Baton Rouge, come see it. It's Pluckers tomorrow. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Do everything you can to stay healthy. Be kind to one another, by all means. I know it's tax day, but be happy. AFR is next. So long, everybody.